Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. The work of the National Academies is varied and comprehensive, and our podcasts make an effort to reflect that. One week, we might talk about biofuels or visas for foreign scientists, while the next, we might talk about currency counterfeiting or the growing Hispanic population in the United States. But this time, we're going to stick with a theme that we started last week when we focused on American competitiveness. Unquestionably a topic big enough for two podcasts, it's also a topic of abiding interest to the academies. I think it's fair to say that many people are worried about America's continuing ability to compete in the 21st century. Certainly, the academies has expressed concern that the scientific and technological building blocks critical to our economic leadership are eroding at a time when many other nations are gathering strength. Downward trends in education and a general disengagement with science and technology leave us with plenty of reason, and then some, to fret. Clearly related are the trends in global sourcing of innovation, those radical or incremental changes in thinking, in things, in processes, or in services that drive the economy and allow us to thrive and prosper. The move by many U.S. companies, not all of which can be considered multinational by any conventional definition, to outsource activities formerly undertaken by U.S.-based professional, scientific, and engineering employees have raised widespread concerns over the erosion of employment opportunities in occupations and industries, including many service industries, that formerly were minimally exposed to foreign competition. At the same time, the growth of innovation and manufacturing capabilities in countries such as China, India, South Korea, and Taiwan has raised growing concerns over new sources of competition for American companies. A central issue in the debate over U.S. competitiveness is the process by which industrial firms in the United States and other economies create innovation. In particular, what characteristics of innovation, both at home and abroad, have changed so significantly, or not, to trigger these concerns? How well are scholars or policymakers able to measure any change at a sufficiently granular level of analysis to inform the debate? The National Academies recently reprieved a 1999 study titled U.S. Industry in 2000 to take a fresh look at some key questions and to look carefully at the structural change in the innovation process in 10 manufacturing and service industries. Jeffrey Macker, Associate Professor of Strategy at Georgetown University and editor of the new volume of research papers released by the academies last week, explains the rationale behind the industries selected for study.
We wanted to cover some of the industries that were studied in U.S. industries in 2000, semiconductors, PCs, financial services, and pharmaceuticals. We also, though, shift markedly toward more technology-intensive producing, supporting, and using sectors. So things like software, flat panel displays, solid-state lighting, logistics, venture capital. We also wanted to pick up more service-based industries. And then finally, we needed to include researchers that were actually studying industries. So we needed these university-based multidisciplinary research teams that look at changes, both economic and technological, at an industry level.
And while Dr. Macker acknowledges that this sample is not entirely comprehensive, he points out that they are sufficiently representative to provide valuable insight.
Are they representative? No, they're certainly not. They're more carefully selected sample than the economy as a whole.
But together, they reveal some specific trends. First, we can see the growth of innovative capabilities in a number of foreign nations, countries that only 30 years ago were classified as developing economies. In countries such as China, India, Taiwan, and South Korea, indigenous firms or subsidiaries of foreign firms are performing fundamental research. In most of them, improvements in innovative capabilities have enhanced the ability of these countries to contribute to the design and development of advanced products, including those in service-based industries such as financial services and logistics. Advances in regional innovative capabilities, particularly in India and China, have been linked to these burgeoning scientific and engineering workforces. It's also apparent that there's been a significant expansion of sophisticated manufacturing and services production activities outside the United States. In a number of industries ranging from semiconductors to flat panel displays and PCs, U.S. firms rely on sites outside of the U.S., either through ownership or contracts, for a growing share of their production requirements. Yet another influence on the movement of production design and development activities away from the United States, which can be seen in industries such as software, semiconductors, and PCs, is interregional shifts in the scope and sophistication of consumer demand. Consumer markets for wireless and digital devices in countries such as South Korea, for example, are growing more rapidly than they are in similar markets in the United States. Equally important is the fact that many consumers in these markets demand more advanced applications than is true of consumers elsewhere in the global economy. Firms seeking to exploit and develop new applications for these dynamic, user-driven markets typically must locate a portion of their product development and design activities within these markets. And finally, we have seen vertical specialization take off in many knowledge-intensive industries where the production of a finished product involves the participation of many different firms, each of which specializes in different parts of the production chain, effectively linking companies and economies together to produce a final good or service. We've seen this in industries ranging from PCs to pharmaceuticals and biotechnology. This type of contract-based collaboration among specialists differs considerably from the operations of companies that are vertically integrated in all functions, ranging from R&D through manufacturing to marketing. Acknowledging these trends, where do U.S. industries find themselves most vulnerable?
The worrisome ones, and I don't think this would surprise anybody, were flat panel displays and solid state lighting. In flat panel displays in particular, U.S. dominance is, it's safe to say fairly extinct. We just don't have any kind of position in the actual manufacturing of flat panel displays. Innovative activity has really followed this migration of production. Another industry that's problematic is solid state lighting. U.S. firms are busy trying to catch up as best they can through acquisition and acquiring solid state lighting capabilities. But at the same time, so are many other firms. So it's a pretty competitive market.
But the news is not all bad. Indeed, there are many good signs. U.S. logistics firms specializing in information technology-related software and services remain dominant within the industry. The United States also remains the primary location for advanced R&D and product development in the biotech industry.
Industries where U.S. firms are in a great position are semiconductors, software, biotech, pharmaceuticals, venture capital, and logistics. And I don't see things changing for the foreseeable future. All of these are high growth markets where innovation is going to rule in terms of establishing firms' competitive position.
While we can take comfort in this stability, there are nevertheless lessons to be learned from contractions in the sectors where we've ceded domination. As Dr. Macker points out, this raises a number of policy implications.
We have to have public policy in place that supports innovation in the U.S. by both U.S. and foreign firms. If we don't, that innovation is going to move elsewhere. Foreign firms will look to place their R&D centers elsewhere, as will U.S. firms. Specifically, we need policies that ensure government R&D investments yield the highest possible public returns.
Americans have always thought of themselves and their country as innovative. It's part of our national brand and ingrained in our collective cultural identity. A can-do attitude combined with a penchant for creativity and imagination has in many ways defined the American persona. But is that still an accurate portrait of an America that now competes on a global stage? Are we still truly innovative?
Yes, we are still very much innovative. I'm actually cautiously optimistic. I think there's some troubling signs on the horizon, in particular the fact that other nations are emulating our R&D infrastructural policies. U.S. Engineers and scientists have been remarkably flexible in adapting to this new environment, coming out with innovative new business models and innovative ideas that have allowed us to maintain our competitiveness. We're not going to compete in every industry, especially in the industries that we've studied, the 10 industries that we study. But for the foreseeable future, we're going to be very strong in at least 8.
And though this positive perspective is likely to allay some short-term fears, the threats are nevertheless real, and action is undoubtedly required to preserve America's long-term competitiveness. To maintain and expand employment in the functions and professions that benefit from the globalization of innovation, ultimately, the United States must sustain the high levels of innovative performance that have supported the competitiveness of U.S. industry and have made the United States a major destination for R&D investment from foreign firms. We invite you to learn more about this topic and to log on to read the full text of Innovation in Global Industries free online at nap.edu. My name is Ann Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.